Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Wrapper Podcast. I'm Robert Scarpinito, your features editor.
Andrew Rutten, editor-in-chief.
Rutledge Doggett, site founder.
Andrew Stretch, the Summer Game Fest editor.
Summer Game Fest editor. It's so nice to have you here, Mr. Keeley. We really appreciate you making the time and your busy schedule.
Well, of course. So, I had a tingling feeling that E3 being dead was about to be brought up. So I just got to have the immediate Summer Game Fest response. I might have been ahead of the curve, though. So I'm sorry. I apologize.
Right.
Yeah. Now we're on to our first world premiere.
I think it's fascinating that you've evolved from just tweeting it out immediately to now inhabiting our editor Stretch's mind and body to be here. So I really appreciate your time.
It's the powers of the Dorito Pope.
Yeah.
It's
become one with gamers.
Because the Strand type game, they always need, and the sequel needs to update somehow. And he's just a Strand to Keeley now. They've stranded.
Yeah, that made sense.
They're stranded together.
Yeah. It made about as much sense as the game.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. If you didn't know, E3 is dead. We are definitely going to talk about that this week. And also, we just want to give you a heads up about next week. We are going to talk about Resident Evil 4, and it's going to be a full, spoiler cast of Resident Evil 4. So if you want to catch up with the game, or if you've already played it, you're good. But, just want to give you that heads up for next week. And this week, we are going to talk about the Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves movie that is out in theaters. We're going to do our light impressions and then spoilers. So we will, clearly mark when spoilers will be happening. So if you haven't seen the movie yet and you are invested, that'll be your time to jump off the pod. But for now, guys, I'll see you in LA this summer, right? We're all going to be in LA at the Los Angeles Convention Center
technically still there is still stuff happening.
There is.
Microsoft is still going to be putting on their show.
Ubisoft's still putting on a show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just not doing it at ESA's house.
Yeah, they're not putting anything in there.
It's so funny that for the gaming industry, E3 was really an industry glue event, just pulling everything together around that summer period. And now E3 has, we haven't had a proper E3, I guess, since 21, really since 2019. But still, we're probably going to continue to see everything focused around the summer.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. And I think to back up a bit, just the sequence of events that happened is mm-hmm. E3 was canceled, COVID times, right? Which made sense because pandemic, et cetera. And then it came back online in 21,
2021.
A really patchwork thing. Barely felt
everyone's
like
intro.
It wasn't anything. It was terrible.
No. Yeah. And then 22 again, but they also announced 2023, we're back. We will be back in person in LA.
Reed Pop is going to organize it. The people behind PAX and
yes,
stuff.
And, yeah, I think they do Star Wars.
I think they do. Yeah, the Star Wars celebration.
Star Wars celebration. C2E2.
New York Comic Con, I think.
Right, mm-hmm. One of the Comic Cons. I don't remember which one.
I think it's New York Comic Con. Yeah, so obviously they know what the hell they're doing when they're putting an event on. They've been there, done that.
Right. So then they had a year out of it being public knowledge. Who knows how much time before it was announced that they were planning it, right? But so they've had time to plan E3 2023. And then just last week, in the past few weeks, we've been seeing, reports come out. Like, at first, Sony's not going to be there, which, no shit. They haven't been at E3 for years. Nintendo's not going to be there. Same thing. But then Microsoft not. Then Ubisoft. And then Sega follows suit. And then Devolver, which arguably not as big, but still, they have historically had a presence at E3. All of these companies are pulling out of it. And then, all the kind of murmurs are coming up on Twitter. Everyone's like, I wouldn't be surprised if it gets canceled. Or I've been hearing, it's kind of a shit show behind the scenes. And now here we are. E3 is officially canceled by the ESA.
I did see a dev tweet the other day about how frustrating it was to work with the new people that were in charge of it too. They said it was very different from the E3 of past. And I'm sure that contributed to it a lot as well. I'm wondering if the big companies are this isn't worth the hassle.
Yeah. I think part of what we heard was how uncommunicative Reed Pop had been and the organizers had been. and part of me is kind of wondering, you know, for Ubisoft and Sega to pull out within 3 days of it getting canceled, whether it was just Ubisoft and Sega knowing that the writing was on the wall and wanting to get out to get the story and like to get the free publicity, or whether, you know, with Ubi and Sega gone, kind of the creators had to like throw up their hands and be like, well, fucking, if none of the big players are going to be here, what's the likelihood of us being able to pull this off with less? Mm-hmm. But if, you know, we also know that they were uncommunicative and kind of wishy-washy, you know, it might have been internally the writing had been on the wall for a long time.
Yeah, and I also think with Ubisoft, I felt like maybe a slap in the face where they said we're not going to be at E3, but we're still doing our event, right? Mm-hmm. So they're that's basically them saying we don't need E3. Mm-hmm. We don't need you guys. Yep. And yeah. I think I remember seeing too after they like, you know, kind of tweeted out again, like, oh, don't worry, we'll still be doing UB Forward or whatever they're calling their event. Keeley like quote tweeted it and fucking like, yep, stay tuned, like, you know, Summer Games Fest, check it out, it's totally part of my house, my thing, right? Like,
yeah,
so, you know, it's just, it feels like everyone's kind of abandoning E3, like in terms of the publishers, because they don't need it, right? Like Sony tweets out, we have a state of play,
that's
people will watch it.
That's the problem. The landscape has changed completely in the last 5 to 7 years in terms of, you know, not only the way the news cycle functions, but the way that gamers consume things. And part of it, I wonder too, is just each of these companies wanted to control the messaging more. It's a lot harder to do at E3 when you're putting a show together. You've got press in there, rumors and stuff like that. But if you can keep it tight internally and just do a super focused show that costs probably significantly less to do, it's honestly kind of a no-brainer, especially with the economic climate that we're in. Why invest, you know, probably 5 to 6 figure sums to go to E3 just for the space, not counting travel, lodging, all that kind of stuff, when you can do it in your own house and, or, you know, a smaller venue and not have to pay that level of money, knowing that people are going to consume it anyway.
Like, I remember over a decade ago when they were like showing off trailers for Super Mario Galaxy, the only way anyone could get that was like trailers on IGN. Like, there was no public aspect to it. Just the fact that you can stream stuff, the fact that Steam can be like, hey, here's 20 demos of things that were shown off during Day of the Dev or whatever. It just, it's totally different ways for people to access and consume from their own homes.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it really all started like with Nintendo, ironically, like mm-hmm. doing that Nintendo Direct format and really popularizing it to the point where everyone has their own form of it in some way, or at least many people do, right? So now they can just, all they really need is like what, a small studio with a clean backdrop and a host to say what they need to say, right? And that's something, you don't need a convention center to make that happen. You don't need to rent out a booth and floor space to do that.
I mean, yeah, within this same week, we've also seen the Dungeons and Dragons Direct, which is just wholly lifted formula. And, you know, it's a new way to get info out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, isn't Summer Games Fest just E3? Am I wrong?
Yeah.
I mean, it's they're doing the exact same thing.
Okay, can I counter that?
Physical presence.
Yeah. There is a physical presence, though. It's not a huge open public thing, but there is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we'll probably be close to the Xbox showcase in 2018 in the Microsoft Theater that was the day before the conference or the day after. I can't remember. I remember going to that and they just had a boatload of TVs and consoles and you know, you just went in and played and you could create content or they had ports to plug in, capture cards and all that kind of stuff. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I don't know. I've always felt like Summer Games Fest is more like the Game Awards, but without the awards. That was the feeling I always got with it.
Isn't that what E3 was?
Yeah, I guess that's fair. Yeah.
I mean, that's why people always talk about the next evolution stuff. Like, Summer Games Fest is the next thing. I'm like, they're doing the same fucking thing. Mm-hmm. There's nothing. It's a stream of announcements. That's all those were.
I think the difference with it though is that like it's all through Jeff, right? It's just one person being like, here's the next thing and here's the next thing. It's not like, here's Ubisoft's time, here's their 90 minutes so they can subject you to a dance number.
Oh, like Summer Game Fest pass, they promote those, like they say, oh, here's all the stuff from that, you know, the summer of gaming stuff, or they'll here's the PC gaming show, here's the Ubisoft conference, here's the Xbox conference, blah blah. So that's really, I mean, like, it doesn't feel all that different.
Yeah.
Whereas E3 was E3, and then stuff was like built out from it, where all of these other companies now have so much more autonomy. It's kind of more that Jeff has like created an umbrella to put everything under, because like even without Summer Games Fest, Microsoft would be doing their thing. Ubisoft would be doing their thing. It's just, it seems like an interconnected event because it's under that umbrella Summer of Gaming.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what Jeff's trying to manufacture, right? By tweeting about other people's events through his channels, he's trying to make it seem like it's all under one. It's all under my, I orchestrated all this.
I think it's simply the big companies and others saying that the media landscape of gaming just doesn't matter. We don't need them anymore. Because that was the benefit of having E3. You'd get the whole industry in one place. You get all the media people in one place. Get all your message to the same people at the same time, the same way, and whatever. And get a lot of exposure and coverage that way. That's just not valuable anymore, apparently. Because that's really what it was for. And you hear a lot of, since it's been announced that it was canceled, you hear a lot of devs even talking about how much of a bummer it is that all the different companies can't get together, because there's a lot of incidental, like, oh, hey, it's that guy. I didn't even know I was going to see that guy. I'm going to go talk to him when business starts happening and stuff like that. So ideas start going around where just this incidental contacts and the in-person contacts just not happening anymore. Right. Kind of sucks.
Like, we'll never get a Kingdom Hearts again because of
no
more E3. There's no chance for people to meet in an elevator to pitch something as ridiculous as Kingdom Hearts.
Well, that was their offices, though.
I know that wasn't E3. I know I was going to go with them, but I know it wasn't E3.
Yeah, I know it wasn't.
But it's that kind of stuff. Specifically,
this is the one situation where it will continue to happen.
I mean, there's still Gamescom and PAX and things like that are going to continue to exist. I think this makes Gamescom even more important longer term. Because it was probably the true rival to E3 in terms of scope and size and kind of the way that the game dev community comes together. I think we're also continuing to see complaints from developers about GDC and the costs that are associated with that. So I think this is an opportunity for Gamescom to kind of become that yearly kind of central networking opportunity. And replace some smaller components of E3, but I think the future for conferences is it's not tied to any sort of a convention. Not when you have, you know, Summer Games Fest for the ability to show off trailers and things like that. You've got the Game Awards at the end of the year. You've got your own directs peppered throughout the year and stuff like that. I think that it's going to be interesting to see what they say over the next year. I think that it's a question of whether or not the ESA is going to give up on E3 at this point too. The last couple of years didn't work out. Let's just scrap it. And after that, I mean, that's the one major thing that the ESA is involved in. So how does that organization change over the coming years as well? I think we're in for an interesting change in how things are communicated and how the industry comes together on an annual basis.
It's changed a lot because like dev cycles for games were based around E3. Like, all right, we got to start working on the E3 demo when they're making a game, especially at these big companies. So like it's, I wonder if how much of that played into it too. It's like, well, we've been so used to for a few years now, we just haven't given a shit about having a demo ready.
For even the game release cycle has changed completely over the last 5 years. It used to be like everything's in Q3, Q4, Q1, Q2. Q2 is especially dead, but now it's like
it's all
like, fucking hell, dude. It's been September through April. May's starting to heat up. Like we're gonna have 12 months of just absolute bonkers game releases, and
it's everything. I'm already tired.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I mean, now when you look at the year, like kind of zooming out, you know, holistically, you look at the big events, the tentpole gaming events where there might be announcements of some kind. You start off like what, at GDC, that's usually March-ish, right?
Yeah, that just, then, that was like 2 weeks ago or week
ago. Yeah, and then PAX East is right after that usually. And yeah, like sometimes you get announcements from there. June, July is the summer games mess. And then August is Gamescom. And then right after that's PAX West. Then right after that is Tokyo Game Show, right? And that's all September. And then October, November is pretty open, only because that's when a lot of games do come out still. And then December is Game Awards. And then you start right back up at March. So that's kind of what you're looking at now. And like, when you look at that, you know, like bam, 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 you think, okay, yeah, do we need E3? Like, is, would E3 even have had a real worthy fighting chance of like standing out among all of those things now? It's kind of hard to say.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it's just the nostalgia, right? I think everyone is, because E3 has been a...
But I guess the big question is, so all these, all of those things, they went through COVID too. Why is this the only one that died? I think that's a worth question.
Never adapted. It was so focused on this is what we've always been, not this is what we need to be.
Adapt to what? PAX is exactly the same.
Yeah, PAX hasn't adapted in any way. But I also think the goal of PAX is a little different.
Right, I'm just saying, I don't think Gamescom's really changed either.
Gamescom's open to the public, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think that's the one difference, is that E3 is still smaller public presence, which developers may see as less of a value. When you can go to Gamescom and really interact directly with gamers and kind of build that word of mouth type advertising too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were making that shift prior to COVID though.
Yeah.
Yeah. In yeah. I mean, wasn't it that first year it was open to the public? Didn't it cost like $1,000 just for the,
that's it
was
the difference too.
Nightmare year too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's not even including like plane tickets, lodging, like if you're flying in. You know, as a non-media, non-industry person, like that's just like paying too much money just for the dream of going to E3, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, pricing's definitely a factor. LA's not cheap. San Francisco's not cheap for GDC. Mm-hmm. I think Seattle's like a little more affordable. I think a lot of devs are leaning that way, at least based on sentiment. Like, why am I spending, $700 a night or whatever?
Mm-hmm. We need to have more big gaming industry events down here in Florida, because we have nothing, and I would like to go to more events.
You have Disney World.
You have Disney, and do we really need headlines like Florida Man something something gaming convention? Do we need that?
It's true.
Yeah, I'm not sure how well the Sunshine Laws and gaming industry events would work together. Georgia. Yeah. Let's do it, Georgia.
meet you in the middle. We'll meet in Georgia.
Wasn't the Star Wars celebration in Florida forever for a while?
Yeah, I believe so.
Not anymore.
It used to be in Indy. It used to be in Indiana, too.
Yeah. I mean, there is a lot of it on the West Coast, though, right? Like, in general, a lot of the conventions are around here. Yeah,
it's because we're the best coast.
That is true. That is true.
I'm technically West Coast. I'm just the West Coast of Florida.
That must feel good, right?
That's how that works. Yep.
Yeah.
100% how that works.
Yeah. Well, that is E3. We hardly knew ye. Now we just.
I'll miss it. It was super cool. Yeah.
It definitely had a vibe to it. I think that's the most disappointing part. Is that we're seeing something that has been the central aspect of the gaming industry for so long. To lose something like that is huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean, there is a nostalgia tied to it, right? It is something that, you know, a lot of people around our age growing up would look forward to E3. I'm sure everyone has their favorite E3 memory, whether it's like Miyamoto holding up the sword, or like My Body is Reggie, or Sony being like, music. This is how you borrow games.
Yeah.
They just hand the person a physical game.
Yeah, how you watch them fucking kill the Xbox One.
Yeah. Like, I think everyone has like a favorite E3, moment, or a couple at least, right?
Oh, we had a couple. We had a good one right at the last one with the Keanu breathtaking.
Keanu Reeves. Yeah. Or I remember, was it 2017 when all Nintendo had to do was like show Metroid Prime 4 in text and just everyone fucking lost their minds. And to this day, everyone's playing Metroid Prime 4 because it's out 6 years later.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's E3 2023 in a nutshell. Unfortunately, it is over, but we still have a lot of Summer Games Fest announcements and stuff to look forward to. People are still going to be doing stuff. We're still going to see events. There's still going to be interesting things to see. So it's just not going to have E3.
Yeah.
If I can have one last thing to say, yeah, on the E3 topic, is that we're still going to get a shit ton of announcements. It's really for the consumer of like large AAA video games and stuff, it's not going to really mean any different. I do feel bad for any of those indie developers, indie creators that would have been able to have used E3 as a platform to show off their game. And, you know, yeah, Ubisoft and Nintendo can spin off and have the funds to make an event that people will watch and listen to. But for a lot of those smaller developers, this is probably really going to fucking hurt.
Yeah. So.
Which is why we may or may not be working on something. And that's all I'll say.
Wow. Wow. Secret hidden announcement there, huh? I mean,
world premiere.
We need to come up with our own version of that, though. Yeah. Well, let's talk about another premiere. We did see the gameplay premiere of Tears of the Kingdom. I mean, I guess we've seen a little bit of the gameplay in trailers, right? But this was just, you know.
Yeah, not much.
Yeah, this is just a pretty straightforward, like, here's, what, 10 minutes, 12 minutes of Link hitting stuff with a rock on a stick.
It was so fucking good.
Game of the year already.
It's going to be great.
Yeah. It's so good.
All right, good. Done and done. Let's go on to our next
single-handedly killed the durability discourse.
It's the perfect like evolution of that of a system of like, hey, we just want people to fuck around with shit.
Yeah, like I think they saw all the like videos of people who like put those octo balloons on the rafts to like make it fly. And we're like, okay, but what if we made that real? Like, what if we just created game systems that encourage that? And here we are.
There we go. I did with that said, the whole nuts and bolts building things. I feel like I'll do that like once or twice. I'm like, all right, I'm done with that. I don't care enough.
I feel like I'm going to do it a lot only because I think you're going to run into a new thing that'll make you think, what if I put that on a car, you know, and it'll make you want to build a quick thing out of logs.
We'll see how many different things they have going for it. But I'm not so sure about it.
Yeah, I will say I do think all of it looks very goofy. Like it looks very silly and stupid and not cool. like when he when Link put the was it like a rock on the shield and then just put the shield on his back and it just looks like a weird ass backpack kind of a thing. Like
that's awesome. That's cool as hell. We're talking about
all right, yeah. For sure.
Super cool.
Yeah.
I'm so looking forward to seeing what speedrunners do with this game now. Like it was already just a wacky physics engine of a game. You know, I'm still hoping that it's a little bit more linear than the last game. But
dungeons are better.
But it'll be interesting to see how these kinds of like weird elements, like, you know, oh, you know, I'm gonna beat Ganon with a pitchfork, like a telescoping pitchfork kind of speedruns and stuff
that
coming
looks
out.
Stupid too.
That looks fantastic. Shut up.
That looked so stupid.
The pole arm with the pitchfork on it.
That was great. I hope you can just keep adding more of them onto it. I know you can't. I know it won't be like unlimited length, but that'd be amazing.
But what if? That would be great.
Like it'd be great.
Beer can wizard staff. You just keep making it longer.
Yes.
Yeah. I do wonder. I am very curious about how speedrunners and like game breakers are going to do with it, because you can bet your ass like within a week or a month we're going to see like if you attach these objects together and clip it through this wall you can teleport into the final dungeon where you beat Ganon again. You know what I mean? We're going to find some weird shit like that. I bet.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
dude. Link's can't got wait a to mullet see it. Now. Link. What do you mean? Link looks cool as hell. How dare you say he looks not cool?
No, Link looks fine. I think it's the fucking literal rock on a stick.
Great.
Like, it's that stuff that looks stupid.
Yeah. It looks fantastic. It's why we play games.
We play games for that.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's stupid.
I'm so excited to see.
Can you stick a rock on a stick in real life? No.
Especially with the bow and arrow.
Yeah.
Bow and arrow and a bunch of shit to the end. Mushroom and this and that and everything.
Yeah, I kind of like how that kind of replaces the system of like ice arrows, fire arrows, and etc. Mm-hmm. And now it's just like the monster parts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That stuff you always had a million of, and you're like, I'm not gonna do anything with that.
Mm-hmm. And I think it was really fucking cool the way the eyes, like when you put the eye on the arrow and it like just homes in, and like, okay, that is cool. And it's great for accessibility.
Just swimming through a fucking rock, through a cave. So I'm on top of a mountain now.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Do you not do that so good. Normally?
I so totally good. Predict that there's going to be some special cave with some kind of like crazy random rare item that's just going to be in the middle of a mountain. Like, no way in, no way out. You're going to have to know that, like, I need to be here and like swim up. Mm-hmm. And then you just end up in this entirely like enclosed cave. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be so much fun for secrets.
And that's where you'll find Cappy.
Yeah. Oh my God. This game would go from 10 to 11.
Yeah. The first 11 10. Out of 10 game. The first in the world. One. Yeah. Yeah. I think there's going to be so many hidden secrets in this.
That's why you bring up Cappy, because me and Christian, our social lead, reacted to it on the day the trailer came out. And one of the things I said is it gave me heavy Odyssey vibes in terms of like Odyssey was just all about having fun with the Mario formula, essentially. And this feels like it's just, that's what Nintendo's really good at. It's like, yeah, this just looks like fun times, like I don't need anything else.
Yeah,
just a ton of stuff.
Yeah, because I think a lot of what it is because I've actually been playing a little bit of Breath of the Wild 1, because like, you know, while I was traveling, I was like, I have my Switch and I could play Metroid Prime Remastered and it's okay, but I've got Breath of the Wild here too, so I was going back through that and it was reminding me like there is a lot in that game, of course, that's about like freedom and that you can solve any puzzle in any way, but there is a little bit of tedium to it, right? Like if you need to climb a sheer cliff, you need to kind of plan it out depending on your stamina, find good places to rest, etc. Or if you need to cross a lake, you could do that trick where you like ice block and then you kind of hop forward with like two ice blocks at a time, but that just takes forever. And this game is just giving you tools, like the new one, the sequel is giving you tools that like gives you the same outcome, but just with quicker, you know, like you don't have to worry about it. Like if you're climbing up a sheer cliff, just find a cave and swim to the top, right? Or if you want to cross a lake, build a janky ass boat out of trees that you cut down with your stick on a rock or rock on a stick, either one, and then just sail that across, you know, like they're just giving you a lot of solutions, like a lot more solutions to things that I'm really enjoying.
Oh yeah. We're only like 6 weeks away from it too.
Yeah.
That's a big crazy thing to me, because we know nothing about the story as well. Or like what
Zelda could be fucking dead, who knows?
Format the game will have.
Yeah. Is there a replacement to shrines? Because that was a big chunk of gameplay in the original.
Yeah.
I hope they just tell no one anything. Like the rest of the videos are just wacky shit, and then everybody gets the game and they figure it out from there. Like,
I wouldn't be surprised if we get one more direct, but I also wouldn't be surprised if we get no more. It just comes out.
I kind of hope we get no more directs, if I'm honest.
I do too.
I feel like they still will, because I think Nintendo knows this is a big moneymaker for them, and they want to, you know, have as much advertising out there as possible to get word of mouth out. But from like an excited perspective, player perspective, I just want to go in as blind as I can now. I just want to discover the weird, wacky shit that's in there, you know?
Yep. Can you stick stuff to a horse?
I hope so. Do you think it'll be like Red Dead Redemption? Like, you know, your horse is your giant backpack vehicle thing?
Hey, man, I'm thinking like sticking that pitchfork to its head and making it a unicorn. Jam shit.
It probably also makes more sense now why we've been seeing all of this artwork with a half-broken Master Sword as well. That, you know, a stick a rock to the end of it. Like, that, congratulations, you've now got the Master Boulder.
Mm-hmm.
Something, yeah, I'm sure we all have Master Sword variations.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if it interacts with stuff differently, slightly differently.
Yeah. Like, maybe if you have full health and you have a rock on it, it throws rocks.
There you go.
Oh, that would be great if it just generated more of a thing. Oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it opens up a lot of possibilities. And what I love is it does what Breath of the Wild did well, in that it just makes your imagination run. It just makes you think, like, what if this, what if that, right? Like, we've just been doing it for the past, what, 5-10 minutes here, just, like, thinking about possibilities now with the new tools. Like, we haven't even talked about the rewind thing much. Because, you know, the rewind is something we've seen in the trailers where it's, like, if a rock falls down from a sky island, you can hop onto it and then rewind the rock, and then it, you know, unfalls, flies back up to up above, and that's a quick way to get to a sky island, right? But I guess, to what extent can you attach the rewind on stuff? Like, can you rewind enemies, you know?
Does it heal them back up if you rewind?
Right.
Shit like that.
Mm-hmm. Or are there ways to manipulate them while they're rewinding, so you can, like, push them off the edge of a cliff or something, you know?
That's
like, walk them over a bridge, destroy the bridge, rewind the enemy, and let him fall.
How great is it, by the way, this is where you brought up the time or the reverse time stuff, the building thing is called Ultra Hand. Yeah. How fucking stupid is that, and how great is that? That's so dumb.
Ultra Hand. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because isn't it is like his left arm, right? Isn't it like a robo hand now or something? It's like a Sheikah.
Don't know.
It's fucked up.
Looks
it's
fucked something. Up. Yeah, something's wrong with it.
Yeah, it looks like a Sheikah tech arm kind of thing.
Yeah,
because remember, he has a flamethrower now too, right? Like, we saw that one of the trailers. His left arm kind of shoots fire now.
This is fucking Mario. What the hell? This is Zelda.
Yeah. No, it's a Mario Zelda. It's both.
I guess Donkey Kong can shoot fire now too. So all bets are off.
Yeah, all the Nintendo characters shoot fire. Even Samus. But I don't know. I think we're looking at a pretty strong lineup for the first half of the year, right? Like,
getting
a lot of pretty good games here, right? Yeah. Like, you know,
Jedi Survivor.
Yeah, Jedi Survivor's coming out soon. We had
we'll have content dropping today.
Right.
Interview and preview.
Mm-hmm. You can check those out at techraptor.net. We had Dead Space remake earlier in the year. We had Resident Evil 4 remake, pretty good. Yeah,
people already were talking about that as a game of the year thing, and it was always funny. It's like, oh man, it's game of the year been decided already, and I remember thinking, like, dude, fucking Zelda comes out in May, you dumb fucks, like, that's gonna and then Starfield comes out, like, no way has it been decided.
Final Fantasy, and then end of the year,
Final Fantasy 16,
Final Fantasy 7 Part 2.
Yeah, if there's a ton of big games coming out this year.
Mm-hmm. This year's nuts.
Yeah,
like, and guys, we can't not stop.
We can't forget the true game of the year, Dead Island 2.
Oh yeah, that's
did that come out already?
It's not in April.
It's later end of April.
Yeah, April it like 20 something.
21st. Yeah, my and then Jedi Survivor a week later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like, just based on that little gameplay trailer we saw, I think Breath of the Wild 2 has a really strong chance of being game of the year, because I think it's capturing a lot of what made Breath of the Wild so good. I think the primary concern I have is just a concern I've always had now recently with Switch games, is just how well is it gonna how is it gonna really feel. You know,
I think it will feel just fine. I cannot think of a first party Nintendo game that's not done that successfully.
It's true. Yeah.
Other games, maybe.
Unless you don't walk into the Kokiri Forest.
Yeah, yeah. There's one little area in Breath of the Wild that's fucked. But other than that,
just ignore that part and you're
pretty
good.
Mm-hmm. Pretty good.
Yeah. Man. Nintendo. Oh, Nintendo.
Yeah, it's like people forget about them for some reason when you're talking about, oh, here's the big games of the year or whatever, because Nintendo's always doing their own thing. And it's like, dude, they're going to come in and just wreck everybody's shit all the time. That's what they do. Like, if other companies must be just fucking pissed when they put something out, like, well, fuck. Like, how the fuck do you compete with that?
Yeah. I mean, watch. Maybe, like, they're going to release The Last of Us 3, and then you can put, like, a rock on a gun. Maybe. They give Ellie the ultra hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's just wild to me that, like, the Switch more or less lives as a device just for their games. Mm-hmm. And no other devices like that. It's like, yeah. Basically most people just play our games on this. That's it.
Right. I mean,
it's crazy.
Still doing well. Yeah.
Yeah.
What isn't doing well though is The Last of Us PC port on Steam. It is
apparently pretty bad.
Yeah, it seems a little rough. It seems like it's having some trouble. I think it was developed by Iron Galaxy alongside Naughty Dog.
Well, I don't know if that is that confirmed. Do we know that for sure?
Iron Galaxy did have a hand in it, yeah.
Because when
does that mean?
Yeah, I guess we don't know how to what extent, right, they have developed it. But the specs sheet were on the PC requirements, like, you know, specs. Iron Galaxy's logo is on that.
Mm-hmm.
So they at least have
something.
Yeah. They did something. Maybe they modeled a texture too, you know.
Either way, I mean,
yeah,
they modeled a texture.
Yeah, right. That's
that's how that works.
Yeah, you just tell your
created a model of an image.
You model the texture, and then the game happens around it.
He meant model like MOTTLE.
I don't know what that means.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No idea what that word.
I knew Stretch wouldn't know what I'm talking about.
No, I know.
Model?
I know what modeling something
is. Get out of here. And fucking Rut said he played WoW. All kinds of shit was modeled.
To mark with spots or blotches of different colors or shades of color as if stained.
They always say modeling with, like, when something's fucked up. Like zombie stuff, their skin is modeled and all kinds of shit like that.
The remaster port is modeled.
Yeah, this model.
Well, thank you for coming to Tech Raptor English Hour.
There you go. Word of the day for you.
You're always learning here on the pod.
There you go.
Yeah,
we taught you banal in the past. We got you for model now.
Right.
Shit, I forgot the banal. So.
That was like our third or fourth episode of this. So
yeah. But apparently Naughty Dog still plans to continue supporting this, even though the port is... I think it's what, like, it took... The reports I've seen is, like, it takes an hour to compile the shaders if it doesn't crash while it's compiling the shaders. And then it'll still crash a lot.
Well, I thought that the hour to compile shaders was a Steam Deck thing. Or is that just...
Oh, maybe it is just a Steam Deck thing.
I don't know.
Regardless, doesn't look good. Doesn't run well. Yeah. I've seen some very hysterical photos of like a conversation happening.
Yeah,
the Ellie spinning in the background and another one that was like a very like deep conversation between Tess, Joel, and Ellie. And then halfway through the cutscene, all of the models are now wet.
Yeah, like they just got out of the water.
I mean, it's a shame too, seeing this happen right off the heels. I mean, kind of, it's been a couple weeks, but right off the heels of the Last of Us TV show, right, doing so well.
Delay it.
That's what we're kind of speculating that maybe this was there was a rush to get it out, so that it was right around still the show was still relevant in the, but like, who knows.
I myself had looked at like my PS4 version of The Last of Us and was like, well, they've got the new part one out. Do I really want to buy it again? And then I was like, oh, it's coming to PC in like 3 weeks. I'll just wait and I'll pick it up then. And now I'm not going to pick it up now.
No, you're probably better off buying it on a PlayStation 4 or 5 at this point.
Oh, definitely.
Because it at least runs really well. Like it's you know, the way they probably intended the game to be played. Probably not the way it is on the PC right now, which is unfortunate. I don't think this is gonna like deter the future of the franchise, though. I mean, like, we're still gonna see people
saving about the last. This is a minor modeled blemish.
Yeah, a little speed bump.
Series.
I just can't believe that Sony as a company would have incentive to release a poorer version of their IP on a competing platform. That's just wild to me.
I think it's even wilder when you think about that this is a game that was released and then remastered and then remade and then ported to PC in a lesser state. Like that's the journey The Last of Us has gone on. It's, you know,
it's the ship of Theseus of video game ports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I guess. I think they really want this game.
I think that'd be Skyrim.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. I mean, they clearly want this IP to be, you know, special, right? I mean, like, that's Sony's kind of wheelhouse, is the premier, the elevated, the, you know, sophisticated games, right? The very serious, like, big brands, right?
You'll pay us $600 for a monitor stand kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. They wish they could do that.
Yeah, they're very Apple vibes. But then this just feels like a misstep in that kind of brand identity, right?
Whoops.
Oops.
Whoopsie.
Not quite the Sony mark of approval there.
No. Mm-mm. But yeah. I mean, I'm sure it'll get figured out. It's just time. It sucks. It sucks for people that bought it now that they're dealing with the stuff. It sounds like it should have been released this early. Yeah. So that is really shitty, but I'm sure it'll get fixed. They're not just gonna be like, well, fuck that. All right, next thing.
Yeah, I do feel bad for the people who, like, maybe they only discovered the series through the HBO show.
Yeah, that
right.
Sucks.
And then they're like, I mean, maybe they don't play that many games, and they only realize like, oh, this was based on a video game. I kind of want to check out the game. Oh, it comes out on PC soon. I'll check that out. And then, the game kind
of
sucks.
And it's one of those two, like the. The Last of Us, the original game, like, it's not that old, but if you think of, like, just for one, how much bigger games have gotten as an industry, and just how many more people just by growing up may have grown up into an age group of playing it and maybe haven't even touched it. Like, there's a lot of people that have never done it, engaged with it at all, probably till the TV show really blew it up. So I think there's definitely a lot of evidence behind that.
Yeah, I mean, and it's also possible that those people like have a PS4 or 5 at home, because it's not unheard of for people to just have it for like Netflix and stuff too, right? Like Blu-rays. So hopefully they bought it there, and then we're just like, oh, okay, this is a good, you know. But yeah, it's unfortunate for Nintendo, or not Nintendo, for Sony here. But
yeah, oh my God, can we just all sit here for a second and just think about what it would look like if Nintendo put something on a PC? Of how, what a nightmare that would be.
I think no matter how it runs, people would be like, amazing, they did it again.
Somehow. I think it'd have like no features at all. Like, you'd go open the settings menu for the graphics, and it's like, yes.
There's a checkbox, graphics enabled.
It's just full screen or windowed mode, that's it. Can't adjust the resolution, can't do anything.
Yeah.
At least then modders could get at it.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
Can you imagine a modded Breath of the Wild, though?
That does kind of exist, right?
It's already wacky.
I mean, the modded Breath of the Wild that is out there is incredible. People have made Dark Souls mods for it that, like, you have, like, a numerical HP, you build up souls, everything is ludicrously difficult.
Yeah, you could
play randomizer mods, 4K there's multiplayer mods. Yeah, they've got 4-player Breath of the Wild running.
That's weird.
I think that the 4-player Breath of the Wild mod comes out in 2 days.
Nice.
Play the whole game.
It's all of it's above board, right? All of it's
Nintendo approved.
100%.
Extremely legal.
Well, it's not Smash Bros, so that shit would have been nixed forever ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think let's shift over. Let's talk about Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves, the latest movie starring Chris Pine and...
you almost said the other Chris P. Right, I heard it.
I did, yeah. But this is the new D&D movie that I think when it was initially announced, people were maybe a little bit like, are we sure? And then the reviews came out and it's like, oh, that's pretty good. And now we've all seen it. I'm curious what you all think. Maybe just like, let's go around starting with Otten. Just kind of like, you know, no spoilers. Just, you know, you like it, you hate it. What do you think?
It's a good movie. It's great. I I said in our Slack, I think it's one of the most watchable movies I've ever seen.
Mm.
And it's paced well. Most of the jokes land. Like, you're never sitting around. And it also, like, lets sometimes, it doesn't have a lot of them, but the some more, like, serious moments, it lets them stand on their own, lets them breathe. They're not cut off by something else.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great movie.
Yeah. Rhett, what about you?
I loved it. I thought it was, like, just really solid. And it was funny, I think I was texting in the Slack before the movie started. It was funny to see the old Dungeons & Dragons movie being played in chunks ahead of the new one. Mm. Which was just super cheesy, very 90s. But I thought it was really well done. I think that, you know, if you're someone who's played D&D or is familiar, like, you'll get most of the jokes and things like that. And it just had a very, like, at times off the rails D&D session vibe to it, which I just absolutely loved.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, from the beginning.
Yes.
Like, from the get-go.
Yeah, there's just some D&D tropes that you see. Yeah. It's like, I get it. Yeah. Stretch, what about you? As our resident, you probably played the most D&D of the three of us.
Stretch was with, like, 75 people.
Yeah.
I got together the campaign that I'm the DM of, the campaign that I'm a player in, the campaign that my DM is a player in, the campaign that one of my players is also a player in, and then some other people that, like, we know play tangentially. We ended up with, like, a group of 16 or 18 people strong or something.
Nice. It's a big party.
I really enjoyed it. I think that they really nail the feel of the chaos of Dungeons & Dragons, and, like, you know, the five, or, like, the multiple-headed hydra of a whole bunch of people trying to steer a story. But I think that so much of it and the comedy of it, where it lands, because I was thinking about it after, I'm not 100% sure that there was a joke that I did not feel, like, really successfully landed.
Mm.
But that also, you know, I think even if you're not a D&D player, if you don't know what D&D is, I think a lot of it is just funny because it's funny.
Yeah.
And not that you, like, need to have the inside joke.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I think people, all kinds of people would enjoy it.
Yeah, because I like that most of the jokes are rooted in the fantasy. Like, I'm so glad they didn't do any of the, like, oh, I guess you rolled a nat one. Am I right, guys? Like, oh, man, did you forget to put your HP on your character sheet? Like, you know, none of those kind of, you know, playing the game jokes. It's all just in the universe, the fantasy jokes, right? Which I think helps it land and helps it kind of be more appealing to a wider audience who maybe are, like, tangentially familiar with D&D but not as into the weeds with it, you know.
Mm-hmm. And also in the framing of the story was very rapid paced. And it did a good job of, like, beat, 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 beat. You never felt like you were hung somewhere too long. That even if something didn't land, I probably wouldn't have, you know, it would be harder to notice, because by the time I would even have a moment to consider why that joke didn't land, we were already somewhere else doing something different.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah,
they went to a lot of places.
They did. Yeah. And it's all set in actual, like, the D&D setting, right? In the Forgotten Realms and all that.
Yeah.
Sword Coast.
Set right along the Sword Coast.
Yeah. So you if you've played, like, Neverwinter Nights or Baldur's Gate, you've probably heard of some of the places they go to, for sure. So yeah, I think we're all very positive on it. If you haven't seen it yet and this at all enticed you, we recommend go see it. It's pretty good. It's fun. Yeah, it's just chill. You know, it's an easygoing watch. As Otten said, it's a very watchable movie. It's an
extremely watchable movie. Mm-hmm.
I think
the acting was super, or the choice of actors, I think, was superb as well.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, I mean,
Chris Pine absolutely nailed it. I thought that they could not have cast that better. Michelle Rodriguez as a barbarian or a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
I like how this is not really a spoiler, but she drops an axe in, like, a forge, and she picks it up and she's like, I don't hate it. And then they just keep going. It's like, just superb.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Chris Pine does a great job of feeling like, he kind of feels like the player insert character, you know, where I guess he's like the least serious. I mean, he's very quirky. He's the bard, you know, he's like definitely comedic punchline type of character.
High charisma.
Yeah, yes. The high charisma.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's something about him that feels very like, this is what a player would do. Like, this is what, you know, a player character in D&D would do, where they're just kind of like silly and quirky and trying to be like kind of a Marvel character almost in a way, right? But they try weird solutions. You know, like weird out-of-the-box solutions.
He was their strategist, planner, the guy with the ideas, man.
Exactly. Even if the ideas fail.
Well, that's he's the king of failures.
That is such quintessential D&D.
Yeah.
To just, there's always going to be a new plan because shit's always going to go awry. You cannot, successfully plan for anything.
Exactly. But I think now let's open the floodgates for spoilers, because I think we're all kind of wanting to talk about that a bit. So if you haven't seen the movie yet, please go watch it. If you have, please stick around. We're just going to chat more about the spoilers. Mm-hmm. And can I just take a moment for us all to recognize the chunkiest dragon?
Oh, my God.
The corgi of a dragon.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Shot. Yeah.
Fattest dragon around.
Yeah. I think that's great. And the solution for that puzzle too, right? Of like, they're stuck in that cave, so they just explode it so they can swim up. Like that, you know, that felt to me very player, you know, like D&D thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just from start to finish, it was such a good like cast composition. The humor of the movie wasn't rooted in the mechanics of the game, but it was rooted in the stereotypes of the game. Mm-hmm. I think my favorite character through the entire thing was Regis Jean Page's Zenk.
That's what I was going to bring up.
Perfect. He is the definition of a DMPC. Yep. Like a DM played party character that shows up, is weirdly connected to everything involved, and then like disappears at the end of that little arc.
There he goes.
Over the rock. Like a very DM moment where he's describing this complicated puzzle that a player fucks up immediately before they can even explain it. That felt very big vibes. Like, oh, all that work I just did, gone. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. He's just extremely competent, extremely badass, like can take down, you know, five enemies solo.
He's the guy that actually gets them like on the plot. Like, all right, get fucking, we're getting you to where you need to go. Like, get this fucking moving.
And then I was kind of surprised that he disappeared and just never came back.
I expected him to show up like a fucking Han Solo moment. Like, I got coming in.
I mean, he does show up at the end just, you know, to take in the con man, Forge.
Oh, speaking of, can we just give it up for Hugh Grant, man? Hugh Grant. He's a villain. He needs to be more villainous in other things.
He's
fantastic.
I mean, he's like a sleazy villain too. Not like, you know, like wahaha evil. Just, you know, fucking douchebag. You know.
Yeah. You don't want twirling mustache villain.
No, he's like douche is just. He's such a
he's so good in the. I mean, really, everyone does a great job at playing their character.
Right? Everybody's great.
Yeah, I think Michelle Rodriguez does an amazing job of just being the silent, fucking angry, just, you know, like, I think they set that tone really well. I think it's early on when they get captured again at Forge's castle, and like she like fights off what, 10 guards, while Chris Pine is just sitting there trying to saw his rope off, right? Like, and he's doing the bard stuff, like, oh, we're doing great, we almost got killed. And she's just, you know, killing everyone really easy.
It's good stuff.
Oh, even the conversation beforehand of like, I was like, how do you clean that axe? Like, oh, that's some good work. And you think, that's the point where the DM is talking about the NPCs that have shown up, and one of them happens to have a really shiny blade, and the party's immediately like, we're gonna fucking steal it. It's gonna be ours. We're gonna do it.
Yeah, there's so much good stuff. I saw someone saying, oh, one of their complaints was there's a lot of exposition. Like, why do we need to know everybody's backstory? I was like, well, I tell you what, like, that's like, part of the deal. Like,
pretty critical.
Yeah. Like, I think when Chris Pine's character is like at the beginning is, you know, going through the pardon thing, and he's like, well, it all started with, you know, goes through the backstory. I'm like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Where's Jonathan?
God, and as they're like, as they're falling out the window, it's like, I gave you, like, we were gonna let you go. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of like I have not DM'd, but it was kind of the vibe of like the DM was planning that all along, and the player's like, yeah, oh, man, we gotta get the fuck out of here. Just fuck it.
So yeah. Frustrating.
Yeah. God, that's good.
I really liked the, you know, for the growth of the characters and the story beats and stuff. You know, we had Simon get a little bit more competent by the end of it. Yeah. I loved that Edgar and Holger's relationship was like one of friendship and like, you know, sibling connection. And I thought that the conversation that Holger had with her ex-husband was fantastic. Was not expecting Cooper. To see Bradley Cooper there.
Yeah. Little Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, it's a little guy. Yeah,
but yeah, for like there to be a whole thing about, you know, D&D is so like heavy in found family. Every character has to have trauma, and the party is your new family. Like that's 99% of D&D campaigns have that, and for them to like so heavily double down on that and be important for family and not for Chris Pine to find a love interest, it was super nice.
So you're saying Michelle Rodriguez is starting in another franchise that's all about family?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
I mean, at this point, I'd almost argue that this D&D movie has been more about family than some of the past, Fast and Furious films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've heard they're all about family.
Bringing Paul Walker back.
Yeah.
The last one.
There's
Did you guys catch the 80s TV show reference in there as well?
I don't know enough to know that.
The 80s D&D TV show with like the kids who were like at an amusement park and they went through this tunnel and they ended up in the world of D&D. That's where you get like the dungeon master character who's like the short like red wizard dude with like the Friar Tuck cut. The other adventurers, I'm gonna have to find this. The other adventurers that were stuck in the maze with them.
Oh, in the cage.
Yeah. The ones that were in the cage, the ones that we saw, like the boy that was the wizard all dressed up like completely in green. That's all the characters from the 80s TV show.
That's well a played. level of down the rabbit hole that I definitely was not.
I just dropped a photo of them to you. That was probably the deepest cut reference that I could think of through the entire thing. That like, you know, fans will enjoy this.
Mm-hmm.
But so much of the rest of it, even not a fan of D&D, I reckon they're gonna absolutely love it.
They played with like what was it? I don't remember the name of the spell or whatever. You talk to the dead people. That whole bit was all good. Why five questions? Like that seems arbitrary. <It's>
like, yeah, moving on. Yeah. I did also enjoy like, so the big bad, right? Feels very big bad evil, right? Like typical big boss, right? Where they don't really speak much and they're just kind of intimidating. And somehow even as a wizard, they're able to take down like a fighter in close hand-to-hand combat, which I found very like kind of silly, but also like, yeah, whatever. They're the big evil. Like they're the final boss of the campaign. Of course, it's going to be that way, right? You got like the big sorcerer wizard fight and all that.
Fight was fun at the end too.
Yeah,
like just everybody playing their part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it felt very
a lot of good action.
Yeah, like and the CG was really good too.
I loved all the sets, the set design, all that looked really good. It was a great movie.
Mm-hmm. I think it did something that a lot of pretty good D&D campaigns do, where it's like, yeah, there's a lot of silliness. Like overall, I think I would describe this as a comedy movie more than anything. Like there's a lot of funny bits to it. But a lot of it comes from, you know, that idea of like the players fucking with the DM in the campaign, right?
Yeah.
But still at the end, where that's usually where the DM for the most part railroads the party the most often, because they have the ending written out and they're like, we're gonna get you on this, right? All of that still had a lot of the like the emotional moments that are kind of, you know, I mean, like, you expect that, you know, like a party member's probably going to die, and then of course we're going to use the tablet to probably save them, right? Yeah. But, you know, they bring in the whole, you know, the wife saying at one point, like, if you love something, let it go kind of thing, or like you're trying to capture it instead of let it go or whatever. And it's like, oh, that's a metaphor for the mom, and you know, all that kind of comes together. And it's basic, it's not like the most emotionally in-depth thing, but it's still, you know, it's simple enough to land amid all the chaos and humor, right? And it just felt very D&D to me.
I think on what you said earlier really resonates that with that as well. It's that they had those moments in amongst, you know, the chuckle fuckery, and they let them sit. They let them get the required amount of time to have the weight. It wasn't a lot of weight, but it was weight.
Yeah, well, like talk about when she goes see her ex, or, well, you know, she goes to pick up her stuff. Talking with Bradley Cooper, like, that was pretty mostly serious scene. Like, there's some funny bits to it, but it was mostly like them talking seriously about a relationship that was going on before they moved on.
Yeah,
so stuff like that was just one of the quieter moments that was cool to have in there. Let it be its own thing.
Yeah, I would love to see a sequel to this with most, if not all, the characters returning. I think it would be fun.
I want Hugh Grant to come back. Be like, I'm reformed, guys. And then he fucks him over again or something.
I would love to see more Zank. Zank has a very Drax from Guardians of the Galaxy energy, right? Yeah. Like, he's so serious that he's funny because everyone else around him is funny, you know?
I think that's the beauty of the D&D universe too, is that there's so much that can happen that there's... Ooh. So many different stories they could tell. They could look at a completely different party and have a completely different storyline.
I think it'd be cool to keep Chris Pine and Michelle Rodriguez together. But like, if you say that, you know, Simon and Doric are now, you know, settled down or doing their own thing or whatever, like, let's go find a cleric and a warlock. And the big bad is the warlock's patron or something. There's just such a stupid amount of already established places, stories. At the D&D Direct, they did bring up in 2025, we'd be getting a full Red Wizards of Thay adventure. Because the Red Wizards of Thay have shown up as... you know, as like little parts of other campaigns, but have never been the sole focus. But the fact that, you know, there was so much talk about this big bad, this big, you know, Thay wizard, and we got to see them in a flashback and in a spiral staircase, like in the dark, and nothing more. There's no way there is not going to be a massive sequel for this.
There has to be.
Oh, for sure.
I hope so. It was a good time.
Yeah. And I hope that they kind of keep the more comedy action energy, right? Because even in the action scenes where there was a lot of it that felt like almost kind of Jackie Chan-like, right? Where it's, you know, environmental action, you know, where it's kind of silly and quirky, but still like cool action scene.
She fucking snaps the bow in her face.
Yeah.
Just ridiculous shit happening.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that would play to this franchise's strengths more. Because I think that's what D&D is, right? When you think of it, like, yes, you can tell a serious fantasy story, whatever, whatever. But when most people get around the table to roll some dice, they're not here to, you know, super duper serious. You're gonna crack some jokes every now and then, because if they go super serious, you're just creating another Lord of the Rings basically.
And it removes I think it removes a little bit of the player agency as well in terms of just the hilarity. I think you know, you never, as a DM, you never know what the player is gonna do, and it just consistently changes the story. And I think that that's why the movie hit so well, is it did just such a good job of like capturing the essence of what running through a campaign is without, you know, touching on the mechanics, like Stretch said earlier, like just focusing on the story and the kind of humor that's layered within this, the seriousness.
Probably the closest that they got to actually making a joke like related to stats was with the intellect devourers. Oh, they go for those with intelligence, and like, if you're not a wizard, intelligence is going to be your dump stat 9 out of 10 times. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But watch, I mean, it's still like, but it's still enough of a, like, I mean, you don't need to know that intellect. Yeah,
exactly.
That, yep. You know, like, you know, you just, you know that, oh, that's how smart you are. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, the joke is funny, but then, like, there's that deeper level that a D&D fan can, like, also appreciate. There was one other thing that I wanted to say about the comedy. What obviously was a nat one with the illusion to make a distracting Chris Pine that, like, yeah, begins to, like, record, tweak, break out.
And then just gets cursed.
Yeah.
That was hilarious.
I cannot wait for that GIF to appear in Giphy or whatever. No. I'm going to be using it everywhere. Fucking hysterical.
It was good.
Yeah, it was so fucked up. One last thing I want to say, this is out of the movie a bit. I want to ask, did you guys, right before the movie started, did the theater play this video of the main cast sitting around?
Yes.
And they're all just like, you're the heroes. You came to the theater and ate your fucking popcorn in that fucking seat because you are saving
Hollywood. That was extremely cringe.
Yeah.
There's been a few movies that have done that. Like, I remember seeing Top Gun and they had Tom Cruise do a thing thinking people were coming to the movies.
Yeesh.
Stretches popcorn bowl.
D20 of popcorn.
Is that your D20 of grease?
Yeah. Have you washed it?
Or I hope you wiped that out.
Well, they give you the popcorn separate, so this hasn't even been used.
What the hell? You didn't use it?
No.
Are you going to store your dice in it? Have it be a big die that has the dice?
I don't own enough dice. My wife owns enough dice to...
There you go.
Well, then that's hers. My wife's... Okay.
Yeah.
She has a much nicer dice than a $30 fake D20. Yeah.
You should use that exclusively as your D20 going forward.
Yeah, I mean,
this is gonna get rolled at least once today, because I've got my session starting in an hour and a half from when we're recording this.
Nice. Well, I'm curious, with that thing, do you feel the build quality of it? Do you feel like it could survive a couple rolls, or are you like, only roll it once and then I'm scared it'll break? You know what I mean?
It will probably be something that I do, like, a low to the ground, like more of a bowl than a roll.
Would you say it's a critical bowl?
I mean, yeah, you could probably like eat cereal out of it, have it be a critical bowl.
Fill it up with milk. There you go.
There you go. Yeah,
just a gallon of milk. Dishwasher safe. I will say they do specify.
Oh shit!
It is dishwasher
safe. So might be a little harder than you think.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Huh. Damn. Props to Hasbro.
I will say before we close out, it was funny. So as I was walking out of the theater staff were like, "Hey, people are playing one shots up front," and there's a local place here in Indy that's called Dungeons and Donuts. That they're a donut shop that has like D&D and board games and stuff in it, and they had a bunch of tables set out in the front of the theater, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Did you get a donut?
I did not. They didn't have donuts. Imagine... They just had the D&D going.
I can't imagine showing up. I mean, it would have to be a very, very concise one shot, because I'm not sure that I would think
20 minutes is what they said. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's... Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's like a round of combat.
Yeah. Probably. I'm assuming that's probably what it was. And it was just like, it was tied in to what everybody was there to see that day.
This is, if there is ever a time that you're going to see a whole bunch of campaigning for people to be getting into D&D,
this is the time.
This movie, all the stuff they're doing with D&D Beyond. We've got the D&D documentary and their 50th anniversary next year.
You know what? I don't think anybody's done this before, guys, but we should do a D&D podcast.
Well, that's a radical idea.
We're announcing it today.
Well, how many of you guys have played before?
I have.
I know Rhett used to play.
So I've played and DM'd before, yeah.
Okay. I played in high school and a little bit in college.
Okay, yeah. Role players, we all know what's up.
Yeah, no, I know how to roll a 20.
You just one more than rolling a 19?
Yeah. And then you roll it again to confirm.
That's right. Whenever you have to do the confirmation roll every time. I know that's a rule.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, I know my things.
Yeah.
But yeah, Dungeons and Dragons, Honor Among Thieves, surprisingly good, I think. Like, you know, it's not pretty just great. Good for a D&D movie, but it's like, it's just, it's pretty good.
I think people that aren't into fantasy stuff or whatever, they're like, I hate Lord of the Rings or whatever, they would probably find that as an enjoyable movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it doesn't feel super like fantasy, you know?
No, yeah, you don't need to know a bunch of fantasy trope stuff. It's just, it's fucking people going out and doing a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, you know, no one talks in like a stiff kind of like fantasy vibe. I guess the closest might be Zank.
Except for Zank. Yeah, I'll say he is.
But then the way he does it is so funny. Yeah, that it's like,
on purpose. Yeah,
he's like the stereotypical white knight paladin dialed up to 12, and that's funny for anyone. Like, you don't need to know that. Oh, that's very, you know, yeah, paladins can be assholes around the tables because if they get like. So in line with their oath, it's like, I get your character would do this, but let's keep going. We've just got to rob these children. Let's move.
Yeah. I mean, I think the core thing was when Michelle Rodriguez is like, yeah, we're going to get that son of a bitch or something. And then the thing's just like, so you blame his mother for this. It's just such a perfect delivery. Cause at first you're like, wait, what? Good. And then, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good stuff. It's
really I want to watch it again.
I say I would if someone's like, "Hey, you want to go watch it right now?" I'd be like, "All right, I guess." Like,
you want to go watch it right now?
I'd go see it again. Yeah,
I'd go see it again. Yeah,
it's fun.
It's funny. Yeah, it was great.
I think that's something that not a lot of movies have nowadays. To be like, yeah, like that was good. That was a fun time. Hopefully, they'll release like a director's commentary or something with it.
That'd be great.
Like, see, we wrote the script with. We actually did the rolling to see what would happen. Mm-hmm. We rolled the checks.
Actually, I have one last question for you all. I was thinking about this at the end of the movie because, you know, the credits were like a full-on graphic treatment, right?
Yeah, they're pretty
and
cool.
That triggered something in my brain where I was like, this is a nerdy movie and Marvel has existed for the past 15, 20 years. Is there a post-credit scene I should probably sit and wait?
No.
Did you all feel...
There was.
Yeah, there was one. Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, did you all feel that, like, I need to stay for a post-credit scene, but why do I think there's a post-credit scene? You know what I mean?
I think that at every single movie now.
Yeah, I just assume at this point that there is a post-credit scene. Mm. I'm glad that it wasn't some, like...
I Google it.
Depending on the type of movie. Like, I think if it's in the kind of fantasy sci-fi realm, almost guaranteed. If it's, like, you know, a Victorian... So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Romance movie. There's no way.
Do you think Oppenheimer will have a post-credit scene? Is that what you're...
Christopher Nolan's really happy about everything happening in film these days.
Yeah. He'll
definitely jump on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. I'm glad that I wasn't the only one thinking that then. But
no, we definitely stayed.
I hope that post-credit scene becomes a cameo in whatever they do next. They're on their way to somewhere else and run across and like, oh fuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
Like I kind of expected him to show up at the end of the movie. Like not the post credit end, but like somewhere in the, you know, the finale of some kind. But yeah.
Can you ask me a question?
Yeah. I think that does it for this week's episode of the TechRouter podcast. We hope you enjoyed. And if you did, please leave us a review, whatever platform you're listening on. Give us a thumbs up on YouTube if you are watching there and leave us a comment down below. What did you think of Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves? Did you enjoy it? Did you hate it? Let us know what you think of it. And remember that next week we're doing the Resident Evil 4 spoiler cast. So finish it if you haven't, or if you're just, you know, interested in our thoughts, you can tune in next week for that show. Or you can go to techraptor.net to see all of our news, gaming reviews, etc. We do have that Star Wars Jedi Survivor coverage that will be out by the time this podcast is live, I believe. So check that stuff out. It's
interesting.
After. Might be after. Yeah.
It might be a little after. Okay. So it'd be a little later, but we will have some Star Wars Jedi Survivor. We have a preview and an interview with some of the developers there. Check that stuff out. It's all going to be pretty interesting because the game's coming out pretty soon. That does it for us, and we will see you all next week. Goodbye. Bye.